with the New York University, City University of New York Prevention Research Center, and her title is there.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. How's everyone doing on day three? Everyone okay? So as a moderator mentioned, my name is Priscilla, and I actually just finished my first year as a doctoral student in epidemiology. So this conference has been a really inspiring and humbling experience to me. And I hope that after this talk, you come away with something meaningful as well. So yesterday, my colleague Alexis Feinberg presented results of a baseline community needs assessment that was done to inform the intervention that I will be speaking about today. And I'm going to take it a step further today and talk about initial preliminary results of a longitudinal evaluation that took place at the same time that the intervention was launched. Although this is very New York City specific, I hope that all of you, as you're listening to this presentation, can come away with the bigger picture of thinking about utilizing community health workers, or at least the framework of community health workers, at your home states and cities, through your organizations or your state health departments, particularly for groups of people who are disadvantaged in a certain way or removed from the formal health system. So just think about that bigger picture, and I'm happy to answer questions at the end about that. So I know all of us in the room are aware that low-income neighborhoods experience disproportionate poor health outcomes due to many causes. There are economic disadvantages, but also environmental, social, political, systemic disadvantages that these neighborhoods experience. And in a way, East Harlem is not any different than that. There are 40% of residents in East Harlem that live below the federal poverty line. A majority of these are Black and Hispanic residents. A majority of them rely on food, social services, Medicaid, Medicare to be able to receive the healthcare that they need. But in a way, it's also unique because there is a large public housing population within East Harlem, and they experience historical disinvestment. This public housing population experiences, you know, lead paint problems, mold problems, limited heat in the winter or limited AC in the summer. They're an older population. Many are homebound. They're just very far removed from the formal healthcare system. And so they experience a whole host of disadvantages that I think is unique to East Harlem, but in a way you may be able to identify some populations at your home state that do experience similar issues. And it's a little bit more complicated in a way that they also view government and academic initiatives with mistrust. You know, they are promised certain things within social services or by other academics that they may not see the results ahead of time. So, you know, they come in there and they're, you know, part of other interventions. They get interviewed and then they don't find out those results, or they don't see any improvements within their neighborhood or their own situation. And so they look at this with mistrust. And I think that bridge of trust between academics and government and the formal healthcare system and these disadvantaged residents was not built to be sustainable or with care or respect. And I think we're approaching this with that knowledge. These residents experience higher rates of these chronic diseases, like obesity, diabetes, and also barriers to healthcare, as I've mentioned before. And so, in an attempt to reach these residents with care and dignity and trust and respect, we wanted to use community health workers to connect them to the formal healthcare system. These community health workers are professionally trained, and they're professional healthcare workers that can provide individual and group health coaching sessions. They do group activities within the community. They do everything from, you know, diet changes and goal setting to increasing physical activity to, you know, fulfilling or filling a prescription at the pharmacy if the participant is homebound, setting up an appointment with their doctor if they can't reach the phone or there's a language barrier there. So they address specific health needs for their enrolled participants, and they also increase social capital among these residents. I mean, they encourage people to get together with their neighbors and go for group walks. They encourage healthy eating at the group level. So they also do health promotion, and I think the most important thing that these community health workers do that I think all of you can identify with is that these community health workers are from the same neighborhoods that they are serving. So they share race, ethnicity, language, life experiences, culture. You know, if something changes within their personal public housing development, they identify with the participants that they serve and they could share their frustrations and they could say, okay, this is what we can do about it. Let's do it together. And so they build trust within their community. And another aspect is that they could also be the key to sustainable health changes in this neighborhood. If the same people from that neighborhood are encouraging each other to pursue healthy individual behavior changes and encourage them to get more involved in the community, it may be some sort of model between public and private partnerships that can sustain healthy changes over time, especially in these disadvantaged neighborhoods that view government with mistrust. Another aspect of the intervention that we are looking at is the use of health advocates. And these health advocates are part of a CBO in the neighborhood that provide health insurance enrollment and post-enrollment navigational assistance. We're not testing the effectiveness of the health advocates per se, because these health advocates have been involved in New York City now for some time. So all New Yorkers are able to reach them and utilize them. The only difference now is that there's a formal link. So maybe the participant wasn't aware that health advocates existed in New York City. Now, if their community health worker sees that they need to make an appointment with a doctor, or they need to find one that accepts their insurance, or they need a new insurance plan, they formally refer the participant to this health advocate, and now there's accountability there and transparency to make sure that the health advocate does help the participant get the help that they need. I am part of an ongoing systematic review that looks at a range of studies that have utilized community health workers across the world. And many observational studies have found that community health workers are effective to improve a range of health outcomes, everything from infectious disease conditions to cancer screening. So they're not just utilized for a one disease thing. They're really disease agnostic and can be used for a multitude of things. However, they haven't been really used on the place-based initiative level, but of those that did use them, they did address and acknowledge the social and built environments that really affect health outcomes in these populations. And none have been launched with municipal funds. So in a way, this is very unique. It is publicly funded, but there are private-public partnerships within it. And we all know and hypothesize that public-private partnerships and multi-collaborative projects are what is needed to sustain healthy living in these populations. So this initiative was launched in 5 public housing developments in East and Central Harlem, and we call it the Harlem Health Advocacy Partners, or HHAP. And the evaluation objective is to demonstrate feasibility and effectiveness of this initiative in public housing developments. And I'm going to present some initial evaluation response rates, satisfaction levels of the community health worker to assess acceptability. And I think this is really important because this initiative is not just a one-year thing. We hope to enroll 200 participants every year for the next few years. And if this evaluation shows that a participant is not exactly satisfied with their CHW for a certain reason, or that public housing politics is getting in the way of them pursuing better health, every single year the next group of enrollees can receive better care, and we know where to acknowledge and what gaps to fill. All participants enrolled in the initiative and in the evaluation are at least 18 years and older and had at least one diagnosis of either hypertension, diabetes, and or asthma. There was also a comparison group from 5 nearby public housing developments also in East Harlem that were enrolled. We asked participants for their consent and HIPAA authorization consent because we hope to use also authorization forms like how many times a participant visited a doctor's office or what prescriptions did they fill at what time to be able to track whether that was improved through the use of a community health worker. And each participant was offered $20 cash incentive to fill out the survey that was administered by an in-language CUNY interviewer that I helped manage the CUNY interviewing team. So they were able to feel comfortable. These interviews were done in-home, in their homes, so they didn't have to leave. If they wanted to meet in a local park or at the university, they were able to. They were called the night before to confirm appointments, and it was an independent evaluation, so the community health workers didn't feel the need to try to get certain responses from the participant. You know, so we asked them, are you satisfied with your community health worker? And then the community health worker would then receive de-identified responses on an aggregate level, so they can see, you know, whether or not their participants are generally happy with their services. All participants completed an intake between February and August of last year, and then the follow-up surveys were 3, 6, and 12 months after that initial interview took place. All surveys assessed self-reported physical activity, mental health, healthcare access, self-efficacy, quality of life, general health questions. But there were also very specific questions based on the health conditions that that participant had. So if they had diabetes, we asked them, what was your most recent A1C, for example. We also assessed blood pressure with an automatic cuff, and we measured it 3 times to get the best result. And we measured height and weight if the participant was able to provide that. So as you can see, the majority of participants did consent to provide biomeasures, and they consented to release their health information to us. And this was really heartening to us because this shows us that they have buy-in within the intervention, that they feel that they're part of something in the community, that they trust us, that they trust this partnership, and we made it visible to them enough that they know that, you know, their neighbor down the hall is in the project also. They feel like they're part of something in the community. Both intervention comparison groups, there were no differences in gender, race, ethnicity, or education. And health insurance status and other variables. The main difference between the two groups was that the intervention participants were older, statistically significantly older, with a greater proportion with hypertension. So at baseline, they were sicker. And in a way, this is good because they were the ones that received the community health worker services. A limitation of that would be that this was not randomly assigned. So the sicker people did ask to be enrolled in the project. Whether or not that would change the results later down the line, I'm not sure, but just keep that in mind. Thankfully, at 3-month follow-up and at 6-month follow-up, we have nearly a 90% response rate. And as you see, the majority of participants were really satisfied with their community health worker. They scored them at least an 8 out of 10, 10 being that they were totally satisfied, no complaints. And we did record open-ended responses, but I wasn't able to present that today. But we have stories of, you know, the community health worker going to the pharmacy and asking the pharmacist to provide a clear label with bigger font so that participants can see what medication they're taking at what dose with clear instructions of the time. They accompanied their participants to doctor's offices and provided, like, translation between an English-speaking doctor and a Spanish-speaking patient, for example. So there were a lot of great stories there that we're planning on doing a content analysis for and disseminating that later down the line. And the 12-month follow-up is ongoing. A troubling aspect of this is that the response rate is hard to keep up, but this is also a population that is very sick. Some of them are homebound, bedbound. They are hard to reach. Not the fact that the community health worker cannot reach them, but we are asking for a lot. They are taking part in multiple health coaching sessions. They're seeing health advocates. Then they're seeing the community interviewers to interview them for follow-up. It's a lot to demand of someone who is sick and does not have the resources or the time or the energy to fill all this. So we're doing our best. We're seeing them evening hours, on weekends, early in the morning, on their lunch break. You know, we'll meet them downtown at wherever they work. So we're trying to reach them where they're at, but it's still something that's difficult to keep up. Regardless of all of that, there is high acceptance of the evaluation components and initial follow-up rates, and they're generally really happy with the intervention. They're showing strong interest and satisfaction in their community health worker and their health advocate if they were to receive those services. Between this partnership that I'm going to speak about in a minute, we wanted to acknowledge how between the partners, we are able to disseminate information at each follow-up using what we call progress reports. And this could be something useful for all of you if you work in something that's really collaborative. We do something really simple where we kind of highlight, okay, what's the demographics of the population that we're serving at this follow-up time, whoever completed this the follow-up survey at this time. What are their health issues? Are they improving on their blood pressure? Are they measuring their blood pressure more frequently? Just checking in at each follow-up survey time, and we share this with all the partners, and it kind of gives some sort of inspiration and boost to the project. You know, if you see that you're helping the participants improve on the amount of times that they're checking their blood pressure a week, it might help the community health worker feel more inspired to continue doing this during the health coaching sessions and reaching their population. And then to disseminate to the wider public health audience, I recently submitted a manuscript in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine. It's being reviewed by the editors, so cross fingers. It focuses on the details of the 3-month survey, and that some of the challenges that we faced implementing this initiative. You know, this was spearheaded by the Department of Health, but there is some politics involved in that, especially because it was an independent evaluation of the services that they are leading, which could be tricky, but I think it's important for us to cross that barrier and to talk about what challenges they are and what can we learn from each other to be able to pursue more of this in New York City, and other places as well. And we're presenting at different conferences such as these. And if you go to the website of NYU CUNY Prevention Research Center, you'll find, I copy and pasted that, the screenshot. It's called an impact brief, and it really discusses the role of small community providers, and connect them to the participants and the residents that they serve, especially in public housing and low-income neighborhoods. And I wanted to acknowledge my partners and collaborators on this project. As I mentioned before, this initiative is spearheaded by the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene Center for Health Equity. The evaluation, the independent evaluation, is led by the NYU CUNY Prevention Research Center. The Community Service Society of New York is the organization that provides the training and the expertise of the health advocates that deal with all the insurance issues that these participants are experiencing. And graciously, we're working with the New York City Housing Authority that, you know, oversees all of the public housing developments in New York City, and we're really connecting with them and trying to reach these participants where they're at, acknowledging any of the built environment issues. They've been really great hearing us and finding workshops and meetings to acknowledge the very specific housing issues that these participants are experiencing. And all the individuals on this slide are everyone that we work with at these institutions. And we hope over the next few years that we're able to disseminate more of this, to share with you our challenges and our successes of using community health workers in this population. And we hope that you learn something from this also and take that back with you at your hope organizations. Thank you. Do I have time? Any questions?
So the community health workers, health advocates, they come in from the neighborhoods that they live in?
The community health workers are.
Okay.
They live in East Harlem Public Housing Development, so they are. Health advocates are not. They're hired by a separate community-based organization.
Is it hard to find health workers?
They were recruited, so the Department of Health sends out ads, just like job ads, like every other organization, and they say, you know, we're looking for someone from the community who's interested in learning about health coaching, who wants to be involved in health. You know, a lot of these community health workers are trying to get their foot in the door in the healthcare system, and they're from these neighborhoods that they may not have access to the education, the formal education system, so this is a way for them to get that training. They get hired by the Department of Health, they get trained, and then they get sent out to their own neighborhood to recruit their own residents. Yeah. Hey. Yeah, okay. I wrote some down because I knew someone was going to ask me about that. let's see here. Okay, I don't have all of them. They're going to be in that manuscript. I can't memorize all of them, but I have. There was greater improvement in physical activity in the intervention group than in the comparison group at 3 months. Improvements in self-reporting or self-measuring blood pressure at certain times of the week. They were more likely to receive help from a health advocate, which means they are making that link to the formal healthcare system. And 97% of those that were working with a health advocate found it helpful.
Trying to capture which services and then what types of referral they might
Yeah, we do ask a question specifically asking them what social services they've received, and I think what services the community health worker specifically specifically were able to help them with. I don't have that data on me, but I know that the Prevention Research Center held this forum last year that scope of work was a major discussion point of different organizations saying, okay, what exactly can they do within each state has a certain, I know, limitation to each healthcare worker. Some can provide medication, some can't. With our project, I know that they were able to do some of the things that participants can't. So they made the most frequent calls to doctor's offices to say, I need an appointment for, you know, my participants. So not a referral system where, you know, they hand them a paper and say, take this to the doctor, but more of helping them be the voice that the participant doesn't have. If they needed to call their insurance to ask them which provider accepts their insurance, they did that. They did have a formal referral system to the health advocates. That's a very, I think, state-specific thing, though. I don't know the equivalent of that in other states, health advocates, but that was a formal referral system. They referred them to dietitians, nutritionists, the food stamp office. They accompanied them to these social services offices just in case the participant did not understand the language that social worker or social service employee was giving to them. Yeah.
Housing or unit. So
they
not have health workers at all?
No, everyone is able to receive a health advocate, is what you're talking about, or a community health worker.
Either one.
So the comparison participants come from 5 nearby residents, right? So they're in completely separate developments from the intervention group. They are not offered community health worker services at all. However, they are offered health advocate services. So if they do need health insurance help, that is offered to them. And during the interview, you know, the CUNY interviewer is separate from the intervention, but if the participant says, you know, I'm having a lot of trouble finding health insurance, we refer them to CSS, which is the organization that provides the health advocates. So it's not that we don't do that referral either. We do help them get that referral system. So unfortunately they are not, but they are also healthier in a way. That's what it says. So we are providing the intervention to those that are sicker. And all are offered the $20 cash incentive to receive after they finish each round of follow-up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.